the home of Mr. Red Lucas in Nashville. Mr. Lucas, are you originally from Birmingham or from Nashville?
No, I was raised down in Murray County, down in Columbia, Tennessee.
Columbia, Tennessee.
I lived on the farm out there in Murray County.
What, were you the only child, or did you have any brothers and sisters?
No, I had three brothers and three sisters.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did your other brothers play baseball?
I had one brother that played over in the Appalachian League 1 year, and then he was in that league down there, Georgia, Tennessee League, that was years ago.
Uh-huh.
And he played it. He didn't play at Columbia. I think he played at Sheffield or somewhere.
Was he older or younger than you?
He was the oldest one.
Oh, I see.
And first baseman.
What's your earliest memory of baseball?
Oh, when I lived down there on the farm. We played baseball at a country school there. I had a cousin, and he would, he managed one team, and I managed the other. We didn't choose up every day like Lucas did. We'd pick one. We'd start the school 1st of August. We'd play for them. Got too cold.
That's great.
And we had the same team every day.
Oh, did you?
And our teacher, Mrs. Timmons, she was the umpire. And we played till practically it snowed.
Really? Who did you idolize growing up? Was there any one ball player that idolized more than others?
You know, down there we used to get the Sunday paper, a Nashville Banner, and we didn't get it till Monday. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Rural route. And I remember I used to get the every week they'd come out with the averages. But back then I was eight or 10 years old. I moved away from down there when I was only 16.
Uh-huh.
But I'd get those averages and they put them down and go over the averages. There was Cobb and Wagner, Speaker, Alexander, Christy Mathewson. That's some of the ones I used to watch.
The great ones.
The great ball players.
Was there any one ball player that was your favorite?
Well, I guess Mathewson was one of them, because he was always a great pitcher.
Christy Mathewson.
And of course, Cobb, Speaker, Wagner. Those ones I remember awful well.
When did you get into professional baseball? What was your first year? And who signed you, and how did you...
Well, I moved up here in 1918, and I lived out in Woodbine. We called it Flat Rock then. So, we had a club out there. I am in the City League.
Uh-huh.
We had a city league then. I don't know how many teams, but we played every Saturday and Sunday.
Was that semi-pro team?
Just city league, semi-pro, yeah. So, I played here in 1918 and 1919. And a fellow lived next door to me, Tom Rogers. He used to pitch for Nashville years ago. He went up there. I think he went with the Browns, maybe Athletics too, but he played at Buffalo a long while.
What was his name?
Rogers.
Right.
Shotgun Rogers, they called him. Lived over here in East Tennessee, around Sparta, over that way.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived next door. The fellow lived out there, a friend of mine, an old friend of his. And he's talking to him, telling him about me. So he took me down to the Nashville Ball Club one day. Tom did. And got the Nashville Ball Club, Mr. Sloan was the president, got him to sign me. Signed up, that's 1920.
Really?
Well, I was spring training here with him. And they sent me to Bartow, Florida first, in the Florida State League. And I was down there, oh, I wasn't down there but a couple of weeks, I guess, or more, but the man told me, said, the club owner and all told me one day, he says, we played an exhibition game against somebody and I pitched some. And he told me, he said, well, you're going to be one of our pitchers. So I that made me feel good.
Now, did they sign you as a pitcher or an outfielder?
Oh, I signed as a pitcher.
As a pitcher, yeah.
So I went, then I began to splurge a little. I spend my money, go to movies, buy Cokes.
What kind of money were you making back then?
$150 a month.
$150 a month.
But hadn't drawn any yet, the season hadn't started.
Uh-huh.
So for about 2 weeks he came and he said, well, you're going back to Nashville. And I said, well, I don't have enough money to get back there. He said, well, I'll get you a ticket. Yeah. I came on back and Nashville Club was on the road. They were on the road. They'd already opened the season. And I hadn't heard from them, didn't hear nothing. So I was out at Shelby Park one Sunday watching the ball game at City League playing. And somebody from down to office, baseball office, Nashville Club, said it's a telegram down there for you. I don't know why they didn't send it to, deliver it.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I went down and
Score! Tommy Hill! And Las Vegas beats Los Angeles 5-4.
I went on down.
Gianfrido clears his own. Kyle Foley dumps the puck right back in. Brett Monroe, who had been forechecking, tags up on the blue line.
Had a pretty good year.
Ooh, and that was a mistake due to inexperience. Let's listen on what Coach Jim...
18.
Miami wins, but their season is over without a playoff appearance. But there's a silver lining.
Tim Bowden. He was from Georgia somewhere. I used to see him in Atlanta when I came back here with Nashville in 1944. Tim was still living. But he's died since. And, he played center field as a manager. We had a fellow live, last I heard he was still living, but he was in a nursing home. I don't know whether he's still living up in Rome then. A little second baseman named Danny Overton. He played second. Had a boy from Louisville, Kentucky named George Smith, S-C-H-M-I-D-T. He played shortstop. Another fellow from Rome played third base. Zoo Kane, they called him Zoo. I think his name was Frank.
Uh-huh.
But he was born and raised in Rome.
Oh, really?
And he had a brother lived there, but he didn't play. He played third base.
How many years did you spend in Rome?
Just one.
Just the 1 year?
Yeah. Next year I came back to Nashville. I belong to Nashville, see. I came back and went through spring training with them again. I remember the ballpark used to get, the old ballpark used to become a flood. Mm-hmm. That's like where everything would flood. And it would back up and cover the dugout in the old ballpark.
Uh-huh.
We had a train out at Vanderbilt University.
Mm.
So this time the season opened, they had to cut down. So they sent me down to Jackson, Mississippi. 1921.
Mm-hmm.
So I played at Jackson until they had the season, split season. Greenwood had won the first half, and they made a deal, a swap. A pitcher, Greenwood had a pitcher named Stewart, and the manager at Greenwood, he managed Cedar Town. The year I was in the Georgia State League.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to get me over there with him. So they made a deal just swap pitchers, but I still belong to Nashville.
So you got traded for Stewart, huh?
Yeah.
Did he ever make it to the big leagues?
Hmm?
Did he ever get into the big leagues?
He came to Nashville that fall or next year, but he didn't stay here. Anyway, they brought in and won the first half, and we played Clarksdale in the second half. This fellow, the manager was named Charlie Bell. He was a good man, a good hitter. And we had, I'll tell you who we had on, he played third base for us, and that's Huey Kreitz.
Oh, yeah.
He lived in Greenwood. He played third base.
He spent some time in big leagues, too.
Oh, a long time.
Yeah.
He went, we played Clarksdale in the playoffs. We won the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking up to pitch a no-hit ball game.
Really? In the playoffs?
In the playoffs. Pitched against a big pitcher, lived over in East Tennessee here. Earl Will.
You pitched later with the Tigers, didn't you?
No, he went with a couple of clubs up there. We had him one time after he finished at Cincinnati. He was an outfielder. Big Earl Will. He was a pitcher, and then he went to Memphis. He and Huey Kreitz went to Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
I came to Nashville. But Earl, he didn't stay at Memphis all year, but Huey did. So Huey was sold to Minneapolis in the association. And I was sold to the Giants.
That was Giants. In
1922.
Had you ever seen a big league ball game before? Before you went to the big leagues as a player?
No. Oh, I saw an exhibition game out there. I remember the New York Giants played, I forget who they played out, the old Vanderbilt field. I believe they played the International League club, Benny Koff, outfielder. He jumped, I think, went to the Federal League. He was playing, and that's when Frankie Frisch first broke in with the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
He was playing with the Giants. Frisch. And I guess that was either in 1920 or 21, they came through here and played.
So you had never seen a big league ball game?
That's the only time I ever saw it.
So you got...
Until I went to the Giants. I went up. When the season closed, they sold me to the New York Giants, and I went to New York for the last two or three weeks. And we ran off. I didn't get in the game. It was in a pepper game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Three or four of us. Gennard boy, Bubba Gennard, a pitcher. He was born and raised here in Nashville. He had a twin brother, a catcher.
Mm-hmm.
He caught it Philadelphia and he caught it Pittsburgh. But Bubba was a good relief pitcher at the Giants. He was up there a few years.
Mm-hmm.
He could throw hard. Boy, he only had one eye.
Gennard. Let me ask you, what was your, when you got called up to the big leagues and went into New York, what was your first impression when you walked into a major league stadium? Do you remember that, must have been a thrill to you?
Oh, yeah. And scared. Yeah. No, I went to New York, got a cab, went to the Adesanya Hotel. That's where they all stayed, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Travis Jackson, he went up. He was in Little Rock that year. He went up. And so we went to spring training next year with the Giants. And what I tell you about this pepper game, we were in a pepper game, bunting on before the game started. And Heinie Grove, the old third baseman, he was bunting them to us, with Gennard and two or three others. Hit a little ground, and I went in and, you know, picked it up and turned, and I twisted my ankle. In fact, it was cracked.
Hmm.
Oh, I stayed down in the hotel there for a good many days. Finally, I got on crutches, and then it got better. I couldn't walk straight. I mean, I had to turn my hand. sideways where it wouldn't hurt. And Bonnie McGraw, he had a cane. He let me use a walking cane. And I was walking pretty good. So I know they won the pennant that year. That's in 22. They won two or three straight pennants. 21, 2, 23. And anyway, I used a cane, and now he asked me if said, you want to stay and see the series? I could have stayed up there in 22 and saw the World Series. I said, no, I think I'll go home. I came on home. And I had to walk with my foot turned to the right. Keep it both all winter. Well, I went, that is 1923. I went to spring training with them. And went back with them to New York and opened the season with them, but I didn't. I think maybe I got in one game, I don't know, up at Boston.
Let me interrupt you and ask you a little bit before we get into your 23 season. In 22, when you came up to New York, they were a well-established, very successful ball club when you got there. How did the players receive you? Were they nice and friendly to you, or did they go out of way to accommodate you?
Yeah, they seemed to be. I never will forget Big George Kelly. In 22 and 3, he finally got him over to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. But back then, the youngsters, the rookies hit. They didn't hit with the records yet. You know, they had hitting practice of their own. So after I got hurt, I couldn't do anything in 22. But 23, we went to spring training. The pitchers and catchers all went down to Marlin, Texas. McGraw always took them down there for a couple of weeks. And then when the others reported, we trained in San Antonio, Texas. And we had one of the greatest towns for weather. That and Orlando, Florida was two of the best I ever trained in, though we had back then. And hot. So McGraw always split his club up. He had two clubs. The regulars had a schedule. They'd play all the big towns, like, you know, the large towns. And the Yannigans, that was the second club. We played towns like Bogalusa, Cicero, Texas, and Cuero, Texas. And Zanesville, we played all Zanesville and Lima, and I guess the biggest town we played in was Toledo. That was in the International Association. Mm-hmm. Pat Malone was pitching for Toledo then. Casey Stengel was our manager.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. On the second club. Uh-huh. We had a few of the regulars. We had Johnny Rawlings, mm-hmm. second baseman, had Earl Smith, big catcher. Had Ralph Shenners, outfielder, was later on played up there. McGraw always sent a few, the old, not all youngsters. And we always joined them. He played a game in West Point for the cadets, just for the season code. That's where we played. Then we come back to New York and open the season. Anyway, time, cut down time came again, he sent me to San Antonio, back to San Antonio. He sent me back there as an outfielder. He said, I'm going to send you down there as an outfielder. He said, I've been watching you this spring. I could run. I had a good arm. And he said, you're a good judge of a fly ball. And they'd hit us fly balls all every day.
Yeah.
The old coach would just run us from one end of the field to the other.
Of course, you could also swing a bat pretty well, too, couldn't you? Mm-hmm. You could also swing a bat pretty well, too.
Yeah. And he says, so I went down to San Antonio, as I said, Ned had a fellow named Everett Boo in outfield, center field, big height and right. I think it had a fellow named Todd, Phil Toe, used to be the first baseman, but he was playing down there too. So I went back to pitching. I think I won 18 games that year. Had a big fellow named Bob Coleman, catcher. He managed the Braves a few years, a good many years later. He was from up in Evansville, but he was, he managed Mobile or somewhere. He was managing the club. I was down there, supposed to have been on option, but when they didn't recall me. I was supposed to stay down for another year on a gentleman's agreement. But scout for Boston Braves, Art Devlin, he was a scout. He was down in, and he found out about it, and so they drafted me. Boston Braves drafted me. That's 1924, right? So I was there as a pitcher that year. I don't think I started a ball game. I know I did. Relief pitching, batting practice. So the next year, 1925, we went to St. Petersburg to train. And Bancroft, Dave Bancroft was managing, the old shortstop.
Right.
He was over the Giants when I first joined. We got down there and he says, you're gonna be a second baseman. I'm gonna make a second baseman out of you. Well, I played the outfield in the minor leagues a few games, down in the Mississippi State League at Jackson. I said, I went out. He wouldn't even let me throw to a catcher. I just warm up and did infielders and all. So I started opening all through spring training at second base, since open the season at second base.
With Boston?
Yeah.
Really?
So I didn't get off to a very good start in hitting that year. Anyway, they bought an outfielder from Seattle called Jimmy Wells, a good young outfielder, and he stayed in Boston for a good long while. And Boston Club had already sent two pitchers out there, Stryker and Juergen, that we had in Boston. And I had to go. Well, they had to send some money. I don't know, Killifer.
Bill Killifer?
Wade Killifer, what? Bill's brother. He was managing Seattle. And I don't know, anyway, it had to be me or so much money. And back then, Boston didn't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go out. Anyway, we were in New York playing a series, Boston. And I got ready two or three times to go back to Boston. My wife was in Boston. We just got married that year. That was in 25. We got married in fall of 24. She'd already come up to Boston. I had my bags ready to go back to Boston. Phil Troy, the traveling secretary, he said, well, Cincinnati helped you up again. They helped me up five times on waivers.
Gee.
See, you had to be waived out of the league.
Right.
Cincinnati helped me up. I played against Jack Hendricks. He was managing Indianapolis. And then when the Yannigans came north, we played them down south. They trained down there somewhere. And Jack was the manager. I guess he's the one that helped me up. He helped me up. They helped me up five times.
I'll be darned.
And finally they waived. Every time they'd ask waivers, they'd claim in, and then they'd withdraw the waivers.
Mm-hmm.
So they waived on me, and I went out to Seattle about Oh, I took in May, I guess, sometime.
This is 1925.
Yeah. And I was pitching out there and pinch hitting a lot for Kilfer. And that was in the Coach League then, Seattle was. That's where I hurt my ankle again. I went in to pinch hit in Los Angeles one Sunday afternoon to play all day game. I got a base hit. It was a tight ball game, and the bunt was on, and the guy bunted the ball, and I was running to second.
Mm-hmm.
I just glanced back, and at first he's gonna go to first, and then I looked up, and he decided to come to second. So I slid in second base, hung with spike, and cracked that ankle again.
Yeah.
Well, they said the trainer on the Seattle club, he said we heard it pop. He said we knew it was hurt bad. So I didn't know how bad, so they took me out, and we were leaving, going from Seattle to Portland, right after the ball game.
Mm-hmm.
A clubhouse in Los Angeles then was right in center field. So I walked on, hobbled on, got out of there, took a shower, got dressed, got us to the station, and I guess they got a bus or cabs or something. And we caught the train for Portland. And that ankle hurt me so bad. It took us, we didn't get to Portland until Tuesday.
Mm.
Had to travel all night and all day the next day, and Tuesday, I guess late Monday night, Tuesday morning, we got into port. It was first day on the Pullman, I couldn't get out of my berth. I couldn't put my weight on it.
Hmm.
The second day, I could walk up and down the aisle, hold it. We got to Portland, and they took me out to the hospital. Had an x-rayed and it was cracked, it was broken.
This is the same ankle you busted
up before?
Yeah, the
doctor said, you broke this before, didn't you? I said, no, I sprained it awful bad one time in New York. He said, you cracked it then too, it was cracked. They didn't even x-ray it in New York. So I was out about 6 weeks. And I got back, and I had a good year hitting out there with Kilfer. I used to pinch hit, relieve.
Mm-hmm.
I had 1 week in Frisco, and I guess I ever had a better week. I think they played a week at the time out there.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Monday was off, but you played the whole week. I know the sport writer wrote about the Frisco sport writer said he never saw a man have as good a 1 week. I hit 2 home runs, pinch hitting, and won 2 games. And I relieved in 2, and I think I won them, and I started 1 or 2. That's the best week I ever had in baseball.
That's a career for a lot of people, isn't it?
But I know just before the deadline come to draft or sell, we bought a train on a trip. Kilfer come through one night about nearly midnight. He'd got a wire at some station, and I forget if it was Oregon or somewhere. They were at Cincinnati just above me.
Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Huh.
They bought me. On the last day, they bought me. And Babe Herman, Brooklyn bought Babe. Milchers, John Milchers, he went to Pittsburgh, I believe. And Stryker, I don't know whether he went back to Boston, and I believe him, and I don't believe where Stryker and Jurgen. They finally got out of baseball. But then I reported to Cincinnati in 1926 out in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed there 8 years.
So this is where you really started to find a home, was in Cincinnati.
Yeah. I was there 8 years, and then after the 1933 season, I was traded over to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. Who were you traded for, do you remember?
I was traded for Wally Rutger and I, an outfielder. It used to be a St. Louis, Rutger. He and I were traded for Adam Komorowski and Tony Pyatt.
Hmm.
Pittsburgh, outfielder and infielder.
Hmm.
McPhail, that's when McPhail took over Cincinnati.
Right.
And it was the first deal made.
Really?
It's the first deal made. I was down at Real Foot Lake duck hunting. And Fred Russell on the banner, Nashville banner. Sports writer. And one of the best that ever was. He's been all kind of honors. Fred Russell. You might have read about Fred Russell.
I know the name, yeah.
So he called down there and called and asked me, told me about the trade. Asked me how I liked the trade, how this. So I joined Pittsburgh in 1934. We trained in Paso Robles, California, that year.
How'd you feel about being traded?
Well, of course I had to leave Cincinnati in a way. I'd been there 8 years. But Pittsburgh had a lot better ball club than we had in Cincinnati.
When you were sold to Cincinnati in the minor leagues, when you went to Cincinnati, did you go up there to be a pitcher, or were they going to try to make an outfielder out of you?
No, I was a pitcher. The only time they ever tried to make an outfielder or infielder out of me was McGraw sent me to San Antonio as an outfielder, and Bancroft was going to make a second baseman out of him in 1925.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went out and had to go to Seattle. But after I came back, I
you were a pitcher. Did your ankle cause you any problems during your career?
No.
It healed and was fine?
Oh, yeah.
When you went to Cincinnati, who was your manager up there?
Jack Hendricks.
Jack Hendricks.
He's the fellow that helped me up on waivers.
Mm-hmm.
Many times he bought me. He bought me in the fall of 25.
Did you enjoy playing in Cincinnati? Did you enjoy playing in Cincinnati?
Oh, yeah, that was. It's they really go for baseball and still do.
Who would?
It's a pretty tough town to play in if you're not throwing good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not running. All towns are, you know. Mm-hmm. If you're not winning, we didn't. We, first year there, I don't know whether I started the games or not. Anyway, I relieved a lot. I don't know whether I pinch hit in the first year. I guess that book was dead.
Yeah. Who were your best friends? Who were your good friends on with the Reds when you were over there?
Well, I have that kids and all of fellow people that were writing me for autographs and all, and want me to know who my best friends were, the greatest player I ever played with or against, or the greatest hitter, the greatest pitcher. I just write back. I got along with all of them. Of course, I had a lot of some that I butted around with it, you know, like Huey Kreitz, and Kelly.
George Kelly.
Yeah. Eddie Rausch. We had Kurt Walker in right field. Charlie Dressen at third base.
Was your roommate? Who did you room with in Cincinnati?
Well, we had a catcher named Supforth.
Clyde?
Clyde Supforth. I owe him a letter. I still right here from him. He lives up in Maine.
Uh-huh.
I got to write him. We've been trying to write him for the last few months.
He was your roommate?
Yeah, after most of the time, Clyde Supforth was my roommate. But I got along with all of them. I didn't have any trouble. Well, we didn't. None of them had any trouble. Only once, twice. Luke and Panetti, Babe Panetti, the umpire, they got into it one time.
Luke?
Adolph Lukey.
Oh, yeah. Adolph Lukey.
They were in the shower. Lukey was pitching and Panetti played third. He messed up a play or something. They got to arguing. It hadn't been for big old Grover Land, the old coach, that we had Lukey to hurt him.
Really?
This clubhouse boy had a sold Cokes. Had a cooler.
Mm-hmm.
Had Cokes at the game. Wasn't no beer. Wasn't no beer. Wasn't any mint. might speak on the end of it. You know, you've seen them.
Sure.
They got this in the shower then, a great big shower. And they got one word brought on another, and they got in, and Lukey grabbed that ice pick, and he's chasing old Panetti around in there with that ice pick. Grover grabbed it, because Lukey's hot-headed. He was hot-headed, you know, Cuban. I'm afraid he'd have hurt Panetti. But Panetti was a battler. He used to be a prize fighter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But he turned out to be a good umpire. They did. We had Panetti. We had to Charlie Moran, umpire. He lived here now. He was born and raised in Nashville.
When you obviously played in Crosley Field. And did you play in Ripon Park at all?
All of it was the same.
Oh, okay.
Crosley Field was Redland Park when I went there, and then when Crosley bought it out, they changed it to Crosley Field. And I guess it stayed there until they built a new park.
Did you like pitching in that park?
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was a big ballpark.
It was a pitcher's ballpark then?
Yeah. But they came out with the line of the ball, and they got so they popped them. I saw Hornsby hit two in the right field bleachers. And Hank Wilson hit two in the right field bleachers, right-handed. And it had never been but two balls hit in there, they said. My left-handed, Jake Dorbert, the old first baseman, and Dutch Ruther, the old pitcher. I hit one there one day, pitch hit.
Did you?
Yeah, won the ball game.
When did they liven up the ball?
Oh, I don't know. It's in there.
26, 27,
It was, it began to liven it up after that, yeah.
What was the toughest ballpark for you to pitch in?
Well, I guess, although I went a game there and won to nothing, we made a run in Philadelphia, Baker Bowl. It was a small ball, it was smaller than Nashville, the old Nashville ball. I went a ball game there, won to nothing. When they made the run in it. First inning.
Really?
And they had some good hitters.
Who did you pitch? Who was this against?
Well, they had big Cy Williams, big outfielder. I don't know whether Klein was there or not. I guess Chuck had a guy named Hurst, first baseman, Pinky Whitney.
Pretty good sticks.
And a big Spud Davis.
The catcher?
Yeah.
Who pitched against you that day? Do you remember?
No, I don't.
But you shut him out 1-0 in Baker Bowl, huh?
In Baker Bowl. Went back there later on in the season. I had to beat 8-9-0 going into the ninth inning. And I thought they was going to beat me before I could get him out.
Really?
They started tattooing that fence. And but finally I got the 3 outs, and I don't know what the score was.
Wasn't a shutout, was it?
Yeah.
What ballpark did you enjoy pitching in more than any other?
Well, I like Cincinnati and I like Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh had a big ballpark.
Forbes Field.
You get a ball by the outfielder in the center field, I could have made a home run on it. way out.
Huh. But how about Ebbets Field?
Well, it was a little rough there, right field. And left field wasn't too bad, but I had pretty good luck in Ebbets Field. Polo ground was tough. It's only 250 something down each line.
They could pull it, they could take it out, couldn't they?
Yeah. You just played maybe your outfielders all played together. Punched them. Because anything hit down, hit the wall and
caroom off of that.
Right off the field.
Who was the hitter that gave you the most trouble in your career? Anyone guy that seemed to.
There's a lot of them.
Not that many.
I guess Hornsby was the best hitter I ever saw.
Really?
Ever faced. Bill Terry was a great hitter. Paul Wainer.
Oh, yeah.
He was a good hitter. And old Big Stevenson, he was a good hitter.
Big
Tyler. They had a good ball club. They had Tyler Wilson and Stevenson in the outfield, all hit about 350.
Pretty tough lineup, isn't it?
Hartnett, Ketchum, Grimm, Billy Herman, Hack. But as I said, Hornsby was the greatest hitter that I ever saw walk that plate. Mm-hmm. I didn't see Wagner. I saw Speaker play after he was managing Cleveland.
Yeah.
He was still playing. Mm-hmm. And Bill Terry was a great hitter. Bill was a great hitter. You know, he hit 401.
Nobody
Dave Herman hit 390 something and finished second.
Yeah.
And Hart was a good hitter.
He used to lift his leg up before he hit.
Yeah.
Stride into the ball, didn't he?
But there was one guy played with Brooklyn. A catcher, Phelps. Big Phelps.
Babe Phelps?
He could hit me. Every time I pitched against him, he would really wear me out. I couldn't, everything I threw him, he'd get a hit.
Kind of got to send you a Christmas card each year, huh?
But he was one of the, but the others, they're all good hitters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Of course, you played in an era when there were an awful lot of good baseball players, a lot of great hitters and great pitchers as well.
Oh, yeah.
You
they don't have as many now. Of course, they don't have as many ball clubs. We didn't back then. We only had 8 in each league. Mm-hmm. Now they got, 26, 28 or something. They're going to get more. Where are they going to get the ball players? That's where you see so many guys in the playoffs hitting 190.
Yeah. And starting?
Hitting regular season, hitting 240, hitting 250.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody hitting 265 or 70 or 75, these announcers are, they say they're having great years.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a story of what Dizzy Dean, if he got a few broadcasting on the radio, and then he went on the game of the day,
sure.
End of the week. He had Pee Wee Reese, but always, of course, they all of them going to clubhouses,
mm-hmm.
talk to the manager, talk to this guy for the game. Diz was in the clubhouse one day with in that talking. Some young guy said, "Oh," I said, "I'd like to. I wish I was hitting when you was playing." Diz says, "How much you hitting?" And he was hitting 240. Diz said, "You wouldn't even be playing."
That's true.
That's true.
Yeah. You obviously enjoyed your baseball career. Did you enjoy the travel and going to all the big cities?
Yeah. I enjoyed it. That's where I got my education, I guess.
Mm-hmm. If you had anything to change in your career, what would you change?
I don't know of anything at all I'd change. I had a good career. Baseball was good to me.
That's great.
If it hadn't been for baseball, I don't know what I'd done.
What's the best game you ever pitched?
Well, one of the best games, I think I showed you that write-up, that 15-inning game against Parmley, the Giants in Cincinnati in 33.
Mm-hmm.
That was 2 good ball games. I pitched the first one and beat Parmley 1-0, 15 innings.
You went all the way?
Yeah. I guess, I don't know whether Bud went all the way or not. It was short in that.
I believe he did.
Well, and then the next, that was the first game of a doubleheader. The next game, Hubble turned around and beat us 1-0, 9 innings.
Hmm.
That was 2-1-0 ball game. Well, one of the, I guess the best game I pitched was in Brooklyn against Vance.
Dazzy Vance.
I should have had a no-hit ball game.
Really?
About the 6th or 7th inning, Hank DeBerry, catcher, old Hank caught Vance all the time. He lived and raised down in Savannah, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Hank caught up there at Brooklyn, caught to New Orleans when him and Vance was at New Orleans together, and then they both went to Brooklyn. It was either the 6th or 7th inning. I think the score, I had him, anyway, I went 2 or 3 to nothing. He hit a bounding ball down the second base. Just a little hopper.
Mm-hmm.
Huey Christ was playing second. and went right between his legs. And the old scorekeeper in Brooklyn gave him a hit on it.
Is that right?
Hank tried to get him to change it. The guy hit it. He tried to get this guy to change it. You know, before the game, after the game, they go back now and change him.
Sure.
They'll change him during the game or after the game. Huey Christ tried to get him to change it. And they said all this, the sport writers, they had three from Cincinnati and a bunch from Brooklyn and New York, they all tried to get this old score to change it. It's an old guy.
How did he justify it?
And he wouldn't change it. He wouldn't change it.
Did he ever give you a reason for that?
Never did. I never did ask him.
Is that the closest you ever came to pitching a no-hitter?
Well, I said I pitched a no-hitter in the playoffs, Cotton State League,
mm-hmm.
Greenwood against Clark State.
Right.
Yeah.
And then this game against Dazzy Vance, you beat him 1-0.
Yeah.
A lot of one hit. And that was a very questionable hit, though, wasn't it? During most of your career, did you play with any injuries, or did you have a pretty injury-free career? Aside from your ankle in the minor leagues?
Well, I had a bad elbow. I guess it was... I was playing here in the City League. I was playing out at Centennial Park. A pitch hit me right on the elbow. I was left-handed hitter. But that elbow gave me trouble all of my career.
Did it really?
I went to the doctor in Cincinnati after I went there. That's the reason I couldn't pitch as often. I used to get 4 days rest.
That was unusual at the time, wasn't it?
This doctor in Cincinnati x-rayed it one time and it just sort of knocked out. Had a nerve sort of pinched there. Curving the bone sort of, it hit that sort of, pinched that nerve. I'd wake up in the morning like this, my hand would be like that, and I couldn't, and it'd pop, and the elbow would pop.
Did you have that problem all through your career?
Yeah.
Really?
And you never did have it cut, now they cut in there, I guess, it cut in there. I guess the first pitcher I ever heard of being cut on was, I think it was two of them, Fitzsimmons.
Yeah, Freddie Fitzsimmons.
I think they took a chip out of his arm, and I think Johnny Cooney. Johnny used to be a pitcher.
With the Braves, wasn't
he? Yeah, he was a pitcher when I was there. Then he went to the outfield. He played a whole game. He played a whole season in Brooklyn one time, made Brooklyn out of Boston. He only made one elbow.
Gee. But you never had your elbow operated on?
No, never did.
Did they have team doctors back then?
Oh, yeah. That's club doctors. Had a trainer, but they don't... Not like they got now, they got everything now.
Yeah.
Those trainers are all, they are graduates, they go to school. Mm-hmm. First, we had an old fella training in Boston, and Jim Leary, and an old Pittsburgh. They just, the old guy in Pittsburgh, all he had was that Sarbean Jr. and a bottle of alcohol watered down, I guess.
Now, when you were at Cincinnati, you said you trained in Orlando.
Yeah.
Where did y'all train when you were with Pittsburgh?
Well, the first year we trained at Paso Robles, California. That was in 34. Mm-hmm. In 35, we trained in San Bernardino. Hmm. That's just south of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
In 36, we went back to San Antonio. I hadn't been to San Antonio since I left there.
Gee, back in the 20s.
In 1936.
Oh.
In Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
I trained there 1 year. That's 3 years. Then the next 2 years we went back to San Bernardino and trained out there.
Did you do any barnstorming during the off season?
No, just around here.
Uh-huh.
Just around here.
There were a lot of major league ball players from this immediate area at that time, weren't there?
Oh yeah. There was a lot of ball players around here then. There's Rogers and Tony. Of course, later on, we had Harley Boss, the first baseman, Vito Tamulis,
mm-hmm.
Jim Turner. Jim still lives here.
Sure.
Lives out on Woodmont Boulevard. George Archer, mm-hmm. catcher with St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, around up in East Tennessee, they had Stewart, used to be in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
He lived at Crossville, Sparta. Earl Webb, old Hook Badu, born and raised up here at Gallatin.
A lot of good ball players came out of this area.
Yeah. Hank DeBerry came from
mm-hmm.
Savannah. And Clyde Milan.
Yeah.
He came from Linden.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Griner, old time pitcher, came from Centerville.
Hmm.
And Phil Douglas came from. He was born in Georgia, I think.
Shuffling Phil Douglas.
He came from over at, lived in Cowan, Tennessee, over mm-hmm. between here and Chattanooga. He and Big Tony were on the Giants together at the same time.
Wow. Now, Phil Douglas was thrown out of baseball, wasn't he?
Yeah.
For gambling or something?
No. He went to... He went to, let's see, he wrote a letter to somebody. He wrote a letter to Mann, outfielder. Of course, Phil drank a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a letter. Of course, the Giants had won the pennant. They'd won the pennant anyway. But I don't know, Phil, and they said Phil and McGraw never did get along too good. But he was tight. He wrote a letter to Leslie Mann and just said if you didn't, they had to play Boston. Or he said if you don't bear down too hard against us, it might mean something to you, something that order. Well, Mann took it and to his manager.
That was in the Phil Douglas.
Yeah.
Manager.
And so they say if Phil Douglas would have, he had to go before Landis,
mm-hmm.
and he asked him, Landis asked him, said, Phil, was you drunk when you wrote this letter? And if Phil had said yes, he would have, but if Phil said no.
Hmm. Is that right? Of course, when you first came up to the big leagues, this was 3 or 4 or 5 years after the World Series that had been thrown. And I know there was a lot of speculation about some other guys may be involved in gambling and throwing games. Did you ever suspect or did you ever hear of anyone throwing games that you were involved in or knew about?
No, after that 1919 Sox scandal, we didn't hear nothing like that. Back before then, they said Hal Chase used to throw games at first baseman.
Yeah.
And McGraw used to he could do it to, they said he could miss balls, and he was a great first baseman.
Absolutely.
One of the best.
Did you ever have a chance to meet Al Chase?
No.
During your career from 23 up through 38, what was the biggest salary you ever made during your career?
I made $16,000 in Cincinnati.
That
for
was
a couple of years.
For a couple of years.
Yeah.
Of course, you had some pretty good years at Cincinnati also.
Yeah.
Did they pay you for your hitting?
No.
Was that part of your contract? I mean,
you'd probably get something like that now, but you didn't then. They used anybody. You did what they tell you to do.
Mm-hmm. Were you generally pretty well treated by the ball clubs you were with, Cincinnati and Pittsburgh? Did they treat you pretty well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
During the 1933 season, after the 33 season, you were traded to Pittsburgh. Was this a letdown to go over to Pittsburgh from Cincinnati, or they had pretty comparable clubs, didn't they? They were both pretty good ball clubs,
yeah.
Great ball clubs. How'd you feel about being sent over to Pittsburgh?
Well, of course, Pittsburgh was a better ball club. Cincinnati they finished down.
Oh, yeah.
Practically all the time.
Right.
But I was up there then, getting up. I'd give the best years was at Cincinnati.
Sure.
But I went now. 1 year over there, I won 15, lost 4. That's the best year I had in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. You also helped yourself an awful lot with your hitting.
Yeah, I got a few hits.
What made you a good hitter?
I just don't know. When I lived in the country on the farm, I always had a stick in my hand, a broom handle or something. I just walk around on the farm, plenty of rocks. I was always pitching them up and hitting them.
So that baseball, after hitting those little rocks, I guess a baseball looked like a watermelon or something like that.
Yeah. I'd always pitch up. I'd play like a speaker, a call.
You obviously took a lot of pride in your hitting. I guess you helped yourself
in
a lot of ball games with your hitting. You ended up with a 281 lifetime average.
281.
Yeah. That's
everybody hitting, if they're hitting 281 now, they think they're having a, they go up and get a raise.
That's true.
You don't get raises. They sign these big long contracts now, and you don't have to worry about a raise.
Mm-hmm. When you went to Pittsburgh, was Honus Wagner there in any capacity?
Yeah, he was a coach.
He was.
He was a great man.
That's one thing I want to talk to you a little bit about. I'd like to give you a few names and have you just tell me what they were like, not only as ball players, but as human beings. Let's start with Honus Wagner.
Let me tell you about what MacPhail. See, MacPhail, I was one of the first trade you made.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mac used to come back here. He used to sell clothes here at a clothing store. World War I.
I didn't know that.
He working up there, and he joined the Army here. Larry MacPhail was, Colonel Luke Lee was a colonel. He had I forget know what division and all it was. But MacPhail was in the Army. And in fact, the business he and some, when the war was over, he had two or three more in his outfit. They said that they were going to kidnap the Kaiser.
Really?
And they went, but he'd gone.
Huh.
And they got an ashtray. They said they've got some kind of a...
One of those old German ashtrays, huh?
Yeah. But anyway, he was the first man I traded. He used to come back down here. They'd have bandits over, old time or anything. And Larry liked it. Drank a little. He'd always say, he used to tell me, he says, you know, I only got one thing against you. I said, what's that, Larry? He said, you're the first man I traded after I went to Cincinnati. And you turned around and beat me 14 straight times.
Did you really?
I've never lost a game to him after I left Cincinnati.
Huh.
I worked for him up at Montreal. They worked in Montreal. Supo was managing up there.
Uh-huh.
I was up there as a coach. Of course, you had to be a coach in that league. You couldn't be just an active player.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't be a coach. Like now, they got coaches in the Class D leagues. But you had to be on the active list.
So McPhail...
Then I worked for him, and he came. We was training in Macon, Montreal, and that's when I got the Grand Rapids job, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
No. I guess that's when I went to Montreal. Anyway, he came to me and asked me if I thought I could manage the ball club. I said, yeah. So I guess we was training in Wilson, North Carolina. And he gave me the Grand Rapids up in the Michigan State League.
Hmm.
I worked for him up there, and I worked for him at Montreal.
Murray McPhail was a real firebrand kind of guy.
Oh, yeah. He was a loud talker. They said, I never did see him getting those big arguments, but him and DeRocher, he fired DeRocher every day now.
Yeah. Tell me about Honus Wagner.
Big storyteller. He was great. He'd tell you some of the biggest tales that you ever listened to. And if you laughed, you got to laugh, and he'd quit. He wouldn't tell it.
Oh, really?
He wanted you to believe him.
Mm-hmm.
He roomed with Archie Vaughn.
Oh, did he?
And he'd always say, I can prove it by Archie.
Pretty good guy, though, wasn't he?
Oh, great. He'd go bull-legged, walk just like feet would just go meet right there. I don't see it. His toes are just me.
Pigeon-toed, huh?
He was, the old timers, Casey Stengel would tell me how he used to play. Stengel used to, when he was managing Boston and Brooklyn, I'd get out there early when he was getting ready to hit. Stengel would liable to show me how he played, sly.
How about Heine Groh?
Heine, I was on the club with Heine. I played against him. He was over at Pittsburgh when I was. He was in the Giants, you know, he was in two clubs. I didn't play too much against Heine.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first went up there, I thought the Giants had the best infield in 22 and 23 that I ever saw, which I didn't. They had Heine Groh at third, they had Bancroft at short, Frankie Frisch at second, and Big Kelly at George Kelly at first.
George Kelly ended up being a pretty good friend of yours over the years, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, George and I were good friends.
What do you remember about him?
Well, I remember in 20, I guess it was 23, he used to let me, I don't know why, I'd get up there to take some hit. Some of the old timers wouldn't let you hit.
Mm-hmm.
But old George and all, he let me go in ahead of him and hit. And then after he came to Cincinnati, we got to be good friends. He's still living out in California,
right. How about John McGraw? John McGraw, what do you remember about him?
I remember how fire and tough he was on his players. Not on the youngsters.
No?
No, he didn't get on them youngsters. Did when I was there.
Was he helpful to you at all, or did he just sort of ignore you?
Well, he didn't have much. He left that up to the coaches mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But after he got to be one of his men, I wasn't with him. See, he tried to get me back after I went to Cincinnati later on. He tried to buy me.
Yeah.
But I told Sid Wire, I said, I don't know whether I could play for my girl. Because I used to know how he ripped and raved and ragged on his players.
Mm-hmm.
He was tough on them. But he had some tough ones to handle. He had some tough ones to handle.
How about Rogers Hornsby?
Well, Roger was a baseball man. He talked baseball all night. He didn't drink, smoke. He didn't go to movies. all he did is hit. And he could hit.
Did you know him personally very well?
Yeah, I used to. I used to. His son just died here the other day here in Nashville. He had a son here.
I didn't realize.
He had Stroh's beard distributors here.
Oh, really?
His daughter, Miss Rice's son's daughter, my daughter taught him out at Madison.
Really?
They live out at Madison.
Oh. How about Bill Terry?
Bill's a nice fella, good friend of mine. I saw him. I first met Bill Terry in 1921. He was playing independent ball, and I was playing at Jackson, Mississippi. And he wouldn't sign it. I think clubs wanted him. McGraw, Toledo, they worked at Toledo then. But it was Brookhaven and Hazelhurst, Mississippi, two little towns down there. And they were big rivals. 4th of July, wasn't too far from Jackson. 4th of July, they came up there and wanted a pitcher to go down and play Hazelhurst or Brookhaven. And Bill was playing against on the other side. That's when I first saw and met Bill Terry. And a few years ago, my son lived in Daytona Beach. He traveled for a tire company, rubber company. And he had to go up to Jacksonville. And we were down there on a vacation. And I drove up to Jacksonville with him. And Bill, stayed with Bill for a pretty good while. He had a Buick agency. Still got it. I think his son runs it mostly now. I see him now. Saw him at the old timers game. And it's the Hall of Fame not long ago.
Do you hear from any of your old ball player friends now? You keep in contact with any of them anymore?
So far, that's the only one I hear from. Well, practically, there's not many of them left.
Well, you had a very long, illustrious career. You look back on it with pleasant memories?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I enjoy it. I enjoyed traveling, meeting, playing. A lot of people who write their kids and all want to ask me my greatest thrill in baseball. I'll write back and tell them my greatest thrill was being able to play in the National League for a little over 14 years against some of the greatest and with some of the greatest ball players that ever lived.
Of course, you were a real contributor to that. You had some
others. You say, I used to read about Ed Exander. The first game I won in Cincinnati, he was the Cubs in. That's before he came down to St. Louis. The first game I won, I beat Ed Exander.
Did you really?
2-1.
That must have been a thrill.
Yeah. We played the game in 1 hour and 10 minutes. The game was over.
An hour and 10 minutes. You obviously pitched the whole game.
Yeah.
Was that was that the first start you ever had?
I guess I don't know whether it was or not, but anyway, the first game I won. I never forget. I struck Hartnett out for the third out.
Really? What do you remember about Grover Cleveland Alexander?
I remember he had the best control of any pitcher I ever saw.
Really? What was your best pitch? What was your out pitch?
I just mixed them up mostly. My out pitch, if a hitter's got a hit of me, I didn't give him the fastball. I had good control. I could get my change up over a slow curve. I could get it over it. And of course, anybody's hit and get a pitch of 3-1 and 2-0. You're looking for the fastest. You know, now this guy that pitched that game yesterday, I've seen him pitch all year.
From Sutcliffe?
Sutcliffe. Now, the hitters get ahead of him. He's got good control. He's my kind of pitcher. He throws them that slider or slow curve, change up on them. And he's got them all out of. And then if they get him, it's a strike. They take it, it'll be a strike, and he's got up 3-2 or 2-1. Then he can come back with, he still come back.
Did you have a pretty fair fastball yourself?
Just fair. Mm-hmm. I wasn't too fast. I had a sinker.
Oh, did you?
I threw a sinker. I kept it low.
I
couldn't pitch high.
So you had to keep it around the knees and on the corner.
Yeah, down. I had to keep it down.
Who was the first pitcher you ever saw throw a screwball? I know Hubbell's the one that's famous for it, but was anybody throwing a screwball?
I don't know whether I saw Hubbell throw it or not before Hubbell. First used to be at St. Louis. Turkey. I believe Hubb died a year or two ago. He was a doctor. Oh, he had a good one. Hubb had the best one. Hubbell. And then we had a fella, Pittsburgh had one just about as good as anybody, Cy Blanton. Now he could really throw a screw and had an awful big curve.
Really?
But the only thing you could, Blanton would throw the screwball to right-hand hitters.
That's the same effect as a curve, then.
That's just like a left-handed curve.
Mm-hmm.
They never could make him understand that not to throw that curve, that screwball to right-hand. He threw it to left-handers, and just like Hubbell, it just fade away from him.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
I guess that's Hubbell and Pruitt. I guess I saw Pruitt before I did Hubbell, I don't know.
Yeah. Did you enjoy the traveling part of baseball? Was there more camaraderie? Were the ballplayers closer then than they are now in terms of friendship? And?
Oh, I guess so. I don't know. We were all together. We traveled. Well, we always traveled on the train. Of course, you get in a hotel, you get the hotel. Maybe. Some of them go to movies, different ways.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them, you just sit around a hotel and talk.
They talk baseball all the time, huh? Now they look at the Wall Street Journal.
Oh.
Do you miss baseball?
Oh, I miss, yeah. I watch it all the time. I've seen more games the last 3 years than I guess I saw all the time I was playing.
When you...
Two or three a day.
That's true, that's right. You mentioned to me a few minutes ago that the greatest hitter you ever saw was Rogers Hornsby. Who was the best left-handed and the best right-handed pitcher you ever saw?
Well, the best right-hander, the fastest and had the best curveball and all that I ever hit against and saw play, I guess, was Dazzy Vance. But now he could really throw.
Yeah,
a curveball was just as fast as a fastball. And I guess the left-hander had to be Hubbell. But the hardest, the toughest man that I ever hit at, left-handed, was Hallahan.
George Hallahan.
Wild Bill
Hallahan.
Yeah. He was wild and fast. I couldn't get it. I finally got a hit off of him after he hurt his arm.
Oh, really?
But Vance was the toughest man that I... First time I ever faced Vance was playing in Cincinnati. I went up to pinch hit against him. First time I ever faced him.
Uh-huh.
Deep air was catching. I never hit the first pitch. But two times I ever hit the first pitch, I'd pop it up. I used to take the first pitch, you know, because you see a pitcher today, and then the next time you saw him, he might not be quite as fast. His curveball, if he threw you a curve, might not break his butt. I took the first pitch, and Daz was a great big guy, and a mound in Cincinnati looked like it was higher than any, and he looked like he'd pitch him down. I went up and hit. The first one I took was a strike. Bang! The next one? Next one come just like it. I kicked it, fouled it back. And the next pitch, I thought, come up and look like another fastball.
Mm-hmm.
Nice one. And that ball, it deep air caught it right down in dirt. I must have missed it a foot and a half more. I swung up in, the ball was down.
So Banks didn't lose anything off his curve when he threw his curve ball.
That was the best curve I ever saw.
Really?
He You're not talking.
You had a great career, and I know you look back at it with wonderful memories. Of today's ball players, what one pitcher would have had a lot of success in your era? Is there any one pitcher that you think looks or is that much better than any other?
Oh, there's a lot of them back then. They don't pitch nothing like they do back then. We had like Hubble. We had Derringer, Walters. They had good curveballs. Vic Aldrich in Pittsburgh. They had good curveballs, and they pitched different. You watch a game now, and you watch the first three hitters. Maybe they won't ever throw nothing but a fastball. That's the reason they foul off, and they stand so far back in the box. That's the reason they foul off so many balls. You back here, you're hitting the ball right here. If you're up even with the plate, then you're hitting the ball out front. Now you watch how many foul balls be.
Yeah.
I saw Kennedy the other day.
Jerry Kennedy?
Mm-hmm. He hit six foul balls all in the same way. He's up left. Six. Never used to hit that many foul balls.
Yeah, I saw that. One thing we should talk about before we finish this interview, you hold a National League record for the most consecutive innings pitched without being relieved. Isn't that correct? That amounts to something around 250 innings.
Yeah.
That's over 25 consecutive complete games.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's one reason I never was taken out for a pinch hitter after I got the pinch hit. I stayed in. Now they take them out fifth, sixth inning.
Yeah.
I don't understand the managers. I get sort of mad at them. I saw two games this year, two different ones. The score was 1-1. Letting the pitchers pitch their ball game. So I saw Chicago playing Atlanta. Chicago playing Atlanta. Turnipa didn't take the pitch out. It won in one ball game. Both. Chuck Torrey took Mailer out and he only had three hits off of him. And this other pitcher only had six hits off him and is in the eighth inning. 1-1. Instead of letting them go ahead and pitch, send a man up to pinch hit for the pitcher. Well, Atlanta came back first. He sent a man up here for Mailer.